In his new series, David Pogue meets the people who are making things colder, faster, safer, and wilder. And the results are pretty amazing.
David Pogue is the technology columnist for the New York Times and host of PBS's Nova Science Now, as well as the new four-part series, Making More Stuff, which debuted last night on public television stations across Wisconsin. David, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much.
Well, this four-part series focuses on making stuff faster. That's the first one, wilder, colder, and safer. First off, do you have, like, the most amazing job in the world, or what? It seems like it.
If you can even call it a job.
Is it a job? Do you get paid, or you just have fun?
They pay me to do this.
Oh, no. Well, tell us about this series. Let's start with the faster.
Yeah, so Making Stuff is a four-part miniseries. This is the second set of four that just aired last night. I think Faster might be rerun tonight in many cities. But basically, it's a host, it's me, illustrating cutting-edge scientific points by interviewing some of the coolest scientists all over the world. We went to five countries and took a year to film this thing, and illustrating them as dramatically as possible. So, for example, for Faster, we explored the America's Cup boat, which, thank goodness for us, won last month.
That was lucky.
Because we filmed it way last spring. And I actually got to go aboard this incredible 6-ton carbon fiber speed machine. It's the fastest sailboat ever built. And the way they do it is that it gets out of the water. They don't let the water slow it down. It has a little wing, an airfoil, under the water on a stick that lifts the entire craft above the surface of the water, maybe 12 or 15 feet. So the entire thing is riding on this tiny, tiny wing, and it's the weirdest thing to see, that the boat is hovering above the water, and therefore it's not being slowed down at all.
It was really weird to see when you said it would lift up out of the water, and it's almost like it's skimming or skating on the water instead of sailing on it.
And what's really weird is that it has two of these wings, one on each side, is a catamaran, but it only uses one at a time. So whichever one is opposite the way the wind is blowing, so the downwind hull puts its wing into the water. So it's like you're seeing a yacht bounce on a popsicle stick.
So
quite a visual.
How fast does it go?
At top speed, it goes 50 miles an hour. So that's, and what's really amazing is that they've managed to figure out how to make it go that fast with only one-third of that being the speed of the wind. So if the wind is blowing at 15 miles an hour, the boat goes at 45 miles an hour. It's amazing.
And as you find out, you know, we think there are these natural limits to speed, to how fast something can go, but scientists are kind of starting to smash those limits.
It's true. We looked at speed in every possible way. The world's fastest boat, as you know, the world's fastest bicycle, how to run faster, and even intangible aspects of speed, like the speed of boarding a plane or the speed of stock market transactions. Or my favorite is we spent a day in Kansas City, which is notable because they have the fastest internet in the country. That Google has been, they're running a pilot program where they run fiber optic cable from the fiber optic backbone directly to your house. And it is 200 times faster than the cable modem most people probably have today.
So now everyone's going to move to Kansas City.
you and a lot of other people.
Well, let's move to the wilder segment of things. What are scientists doing on the frontiers of wildness and in trying to incorporate some of the natural world into the functionality of everyday stuff?
Well, that's exactly it. That principle is called biomimicry. And it's, you know, stealing ideas from nature. Nature's had millions of years to solve these problems, and why shouldn't we steal those ideas for our technology? A lot of the show is robots, and I mean unbelievable robots. A hummingbird robot developed by the military that is so indistinguishable from an actual hummingbird that, as we filmed, real hummingbirds were attacking this thing. It's really amazing. A bee robot the size of a bee, 1/30th the weight of a penny. But there are other aspects of biomimicry that are benefiting us as well. One of the most interesting stories that we did is about hagfish. Hagfish is an eel. It looks like this gray sea worm, about maybe 2 or 3 feet long. which has a really unusual defense mechanism. When it's attacked, it releases these enormous quantities of clear, gooey slime. And I mean like buckets full. And so that whatever predator is trying to eat it gets a mouthful of slime and is suddenly more interested in staying alive than in eating this thing. And what they hope to do is extract the fibers, the very fine threads inside this hagfish slime, and make clothing out of it. Because, first of all, it would be very strong. This stuff is many times stronger than, for example, nylon. And secondly, it doesn't come from petroleum. So it would be better for the environment, better geopolitically. We just have to try to get people's minds off of the fact that they're wearing fish slime.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be good for anybody's dating life to be wearing slimy fish clothes, but I suppose there's military applications, right? You're crawling through the sand or something, and you want pants that aren't going to rip.
That's right. There's a lot of military money behind the cool science in this country, as I discovered doing this show. Over and over again, we visit these scientists doing these incredible things and say, now, who's funding this? The answer is always, oh, it's a military project. But one of the coolest was this robotic, I guess, ox or a headless horse. It's this enormous walking robot. Now, we see robots on TV and in the movies walking like a person, but that's a big farce because walking on 2 feet for a robot is astronomically different. They don't have an inner ear. They don't have real eyes. They don't have sensors in their feet to balance and walk like we do so effortlessly. So the truth is that walking robots are incredibly hard to build, and we're just getting there. But this ox robot has four hooves. The legs are based on a horse's gait. And unlike a two-footed robot or a wheeled robot, this thing can walk on uneven terrain, wet leaves, rocks, whatever. And the idea is our soldiers will load it up with their equipment, and it follows you. This robot follows you as you walk your 20 miles to the site of the battle or whatever. So you no longer have 100 pounds of gear on your back. You have this ox following you, carrying all your stuff.
Or it could be your baggage ox up a mountain or something like that.
Exactly.
I don't know.
I'm going to carry mine through TSA.
Yeah, I'm sure you won't have any problems getting through security there. Oh, well, it's so interesting. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks so much.
Well, we're talking with David Pogue about his new series, Making More Stuff. And we're going to be back and pick that up, discuss more things, which is just a taste of what's to come. And we'll pick that conversation up in a bit. But first,
Rob Ferret here. And Gene Purcell has joined us dressed in his finest hagfish slime suit.
It's a look.
Because he's celebrating the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. We are here to raise the money that pays for the programs you enjoy. Programs like this one, Central Time. That's how WPR works. The people who use it help pay for it. So go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 right now to support the programs you count on.
Yeah, let me just wipe some of the slime off of my notes here. Now, last hour, we heard from about 43 of you. Thanks so much
Great.
For calling in and pledging your support. We appreciate all of them. But it's a brand new hour. That means we've got another goal before us. This hour, by 5 o'clock, we need to have 45 pledges in through the door. These goals are set up, by the way, to make sure that Wisconsin Public Radio has the money that we need to pay for all of the programs that you rely on. So help us meet that goal with your gift now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
The Ideas Network connects you with experts, with authors, with people who study interesting stuff, like our guest right now. How many times do you get to hear great conversations like this anywhere but the Ideas Network? We bring the experts right to you. To help make it possible, give now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Now, you may be someone who's listened to Wisconsin Public Radio for a year or two or three, and perhaps you've never made a pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio before. Well, today, you can find out just how it feels.
It feels great. That's what so many people who have made that first pledge tell us. It feels great to support something you love, something you use, that you rely on every day. Take a moment to make yourself feel awesome when you make your first ever pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. 202-2552.
And remember, when you're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio, that WPR is your radio station. Your intelligence, your involvement, and your high expectations shape everything you hear on these airwaves.
Thank you for making sure that Wisconsin and the rest of the world has a vital, strong public radio service. WPR, it's your station because you fund it. Take that step right now with a pledge of any amount. You pick the amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
So I've been living in Wisconsin for roughly the last 20 years. I came here for school. I think I became a member when I was in my mid-20s. Whenever I could, I would try to send $20 or something and whatever I could manage at that time. I've always imagined that it would be fun to be a philanthropist, and if I thought something was really a wonderful cause that I could give them $1 million, just, you know, open my checkbook. There are not nearly as many zeros involved, but in a small way, I'm a small-scale philanthropist. It definitely feels like money that's going to a good cause. When I became a sustainer, it felt like there was an additional connection. To me, it's a no-brainer. When I became a sustainer, it just made things that much better. Sort of like the way it felt when I got married a couple years ago. I loved him a lot, but when I married him, it felt even that much better. My name is Lisa, and I live in Monona, Wisconsin. I really enjoy being a sustainer, and I encourage you to do the same.
Pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Rob Ferret here with Gene Purcell. We are asking for your support of WPR during this fall membership drive. Maybe your gift is $5 a month or $10 or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose, it's the right amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You've made a habit of listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. You may have been listening for a couple of days, a couple of years, but now we are asking you to make a habit of donating. And this is one of those good habits, a habit that you can actually be proud of. But the trick is to get started. All habits have to start someplace. Get started today by making your pledge of any amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Maybe you listen to us when you're driving home from work each and every day, maybe around this time. Well, if you're about to get home, you're on your way, make a pledge to make a pledge. When you get there, when you arrive at your destination, turn on the computer or the tablet, whatever you got, whatever the kids have these days, and go to WPR.org and make a pledge. Or remember this, lock it into your brain, 888-202-2552, and make your pledge when you get home.
But it's important. Remember, we've got that goal before 5 o'clock. We need to have some pledges in, and we've got just 44 pledges to go in order to make that goal before 5 o'clock. It is your support that makes the difference here at Wisconsin Public Radio. So give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You count on Wisconsin Public Radio to bring you great conversations. We count on you to help pay for it. Make your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. And we're picking up our conversation now with David Pogue, host of Nova's Making More Stuff, where he examines the science behind making things faster, colder, wilder, and safer. And David, I want to go back to the faster, because this is something I think a lot of people will be interested in. Running speed. Now, you kind of think you can't best someone who's a trained runner, someone who's been at this for a long time. But there are things, according to science, that we can do to make to shave seconds off our time.
Yeah, I wasn't convinced at all that this was going to make a good television segment. They had me, a 50-year-old man, race against this 20-something Olympic runner from Trinidad. He beat me. Yes, he did. He had an 11-second time on the, 100 meter, and mine was 18 seconds. But then this Southern Methodist University professor took me into his running lab and explained to me a really weird thing about running. All of us, the Olympic guy, me, little old ladies, we all move our legs at the same speed. In other words, our strides are the same. So it's got nothing to do with how fast you move your legs. So that was a shocker.
Yeah, that seems crazy. So yeah, have the same stride.
That's right. You and I have the same stride, and every one of your listeners, if you were to watch us in slow motion on screen side by side, our legs would move through the same cycles at the same speed. What's different is how hard you hit the ground vertically with each footstep. In other words, once you've started running, you've already got your momentum. You've already got your forward speed. Now, you just want to be in the air for as much of the time as you can. He explained it's like a Super Bowl in a parking lot. Like, once you throw that ball, the higher it is in the air, each bounce will carry it farther because it's already going forward. So the professional runners hit the ground downward harder with each footstep. So when I tried that, we went back to the track, I shaved 2 seconds off my time, and that's after a whole day of running on treadmills in the lab. I was really tired, but it really works. So, I mean, you can just go and do this right now. Just focus on hitting downward rather than leaning forward, and you'll run faster.
Now, does that mean, though, that running should be a game for the young because you're pounding the heck out of your knees and your joints?
We didn't get into that part of it.
And if you want speed, though, that's the way to go, huh?
That's right.
Well, you know, we've talked a lot about the speed thing. Let's skip ahead to making things colder. Now, it seems like humanity has spent a lot of time trying not to be cold, you know, trying to fight the cold and stay warm. But you're talking about scientists trying to make things colder. Now, how could that technology improve our lives?
Yeah, this is a really cool show. This is the third of the four-week series. And it starts at body temperature, and through the hour episode, it goes closer and closer to absolute zero. And along the way, we investigate this wood frog, a very common frog in the Northeast, that does something really strange in the winter. It freezes solid. It doesn't hibernate. It doesn't go south. It just freezes solid. The brain doesn't work. The blood has stopped. The organs are unfunctional. And then in the springtime, it just thaws and hops on its way. So we studied whether or not people could ever do that. You know, we see in science fiction movies, we see people put into a deep freeze and blasted into space. It turns out that the way the frog does it is with antifreeze chemicals in its blood. We, unfortunately, are largely water. And when we freeze, that water expands and explodes our cells and kills us, which is a bad side effect. So,
Yeah. So
no, we cannot freeze ourselves. But there are these medical visionaries who realize that if you cool us down, you can do some amazing things. For example, the simple act of putting an ice vest on you after you've had a heart attack can halve the percentage of times that these heart attack victims have brain damage as a result, cut in half. And yet, only 40% of American hospitals own the cooling vests. So it's a very simple technique. And then we visited another scientist who thinks he's hit upon the solution to the problem of organ banks. Right now, you can only keep a heart alive for 4 hours after somebody dies before you can transplant it into another person, and other organs are just a couple hours more than that. You cannot freeze an organ and store it unless you can somehow replace all the water in it with some kind of antifreeze, some kind of chemical that will not freeze. And after 15 years of trying, this guy has finally got an antifreeze that can keep organs alive and whole even when frozen. And while we were there, we saw him operate on a rabbit, remove the kidney, flush out the water in it, replace it with his chemical, and then freeze it solid, and then thaw it out and reimplant it in the rabbit. And the rabbit was fine. So
Wow. We
may one day see organ banks the same way we have blood banks today.
That sounds like that technology is not widely in use yet. It's still pretty cutting edge.
This is very cutting edge. He, as far as I know, he's the only one doing it, and he's just got rabbit kidneys going at this point. So he's never tried it on a person, and it probably will be a number of years before he does. But the proof of concept has been demonstrated.
Well, and finally, you've got making stuff safer. What's going on in the world of automotives?
Yeah, we spent an amazing day at a racetrack in California where Stanford University was testing out their self-driving racing car. So Google, of course, has been experimenting with self-driving cars for everyday commuter traffic, but this thing goes 120 miles an hour. Now, this is not remote control. It's not on a track. It is literally using enhanced GPS to know where it is on the road to within 1 centimeter. And I actually rode in this thing in the passenger seat as it drove itself through this two-and-a-half-mile racetrack. It was extremely terrifying, let's just say that. But the idea is to study how professional race car drivers handle friction, spin-outs, bumps in the road. They've been monitoring racing car drivers' brains as they drive and turning what they learn there into software for this car so that someday we could have this kind of smarts in all of our cars. So we could have our car do much safer driving for us.
Now, all of these four series episodes that we're talking about in the series, it's all mind-blowing science. It's kind of the point. But when you look back on it, what is the one thing that you look back and you could just go, oh, my gosh, wow, that's amazing, even for you, a science writer?
Yeah, I think, I could point to any number of the individual stories. I love a story from Safer about a new technology that scans incoming shipping containers, you know, all those 60 million containers a year that get shipped to the United States from China carrying all the stuff that we buy. Right now, they're basically not scanned for nukes and dirty bombs and uranium. They're basically an open door for terrorists. 1% of these containers are scanned with an X-ray, which is very easy to fool. You just put a piece of lead in your container. But these guys in California have worked out a way to scan every incoming container with muons. These are atomic particles from space that are bombarding us, 5,000 of them going through your body every minute, and they go at the speed of light through anything, lead, steel, cement. And so simply by putting a muon detector above and below the truck that's carrying the container, they can get a three-dimensional picture of everything inside, and they can see right away if there is uranium or a nuke or anything like that. And they've already got this up and running at Freeport in the Bahamas, and it works flawlessly, and I think it's going to keep us all a lot safer.
Fascinating stuff. David, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
David Pogue is a technology columnist for the New York Times and host of PBS's Nova Science Now, as well as the four-part series Making More Stuff.
If you missed the debut, Wisconsin Public Television will rebroadcast the episode Tuesday the 22nd, 8 p.m. on the Wisconsin Channel, 10 p.m. on Wisconsin Public Television.
Coming up, we'll talk to a guest who says Governor Walker should reject a proposal for a new casino. This is Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.